This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. By the time Jeanette Walls was 12 years old, she knew better than to count on her parents to take care of her. But she also knew that they were teaching her real-life lessons, lessons that would prepare her for anything life would throw at her. It took years before she could talk about those lessons or about her unconventional upbringing. When she did tell her story in the 2005 memoir, The Glass Castle, the book sold 2.5 million copies in the United States and was translated into 22 languages. Jeanette's going to be in Greensboro tonight to give a lecture as part of Guilford College's Bryan series. But Jeanette Walls is with me in the studio right now. Welcome to the program. Good to have you here.
Thank you so much.
Glass Castle is, in essence, the story of your parents.
Yes, it is.
Let's start with your dad. Tell us about him.
My father was an alcoholic. He was a damaged man, but I think he was also a brilliant man. He was a scientist and a designer. He designed for us what he called, it was our dream house. We were sort of homeless. We were sort of transient when I was growing up. Sometimes we'd have a place, but we'd always get booted out and we'd sleep on the beach or out in the desert or something. But Dad said all of that moving around was temporary. He said one of these days he was going to build for us a great big mansion out in the desert. It was going to be solar heated, and he'd worked out the solar panels and everything, and he called it the Glass Castle. And so despite all of his wackiness and his flaws and his alcoholism, he also gave us dreams. And I think that's not such a bad legacy.
He clearly believed these dreams from time to time. Did you, how long did you believe them, and when did you realize this can't happen?
Oh, yeah, I bought into them as long as humanly possible. Mm-hmm. I think when I was 12 or 13, and we were living in southern West Virginia, a little coal mining town, and we lived in a little shack that had no indoor plumbing and had no heat. It was wired for electricity, but we never paid the bills. And my mother, who had a college education and could have a teaching job, she went off for the summer to renew her teaching certificate, and I was left in charge of the household for the summer. And I honestly thought I could be a better mother than my mom. She gave me a couple $100s, and I thought I could straighten out my father, that I could get him to stop drinking, that I could put our family on a budget, pay the bills, get the electricity turned back on, and maybe even buy us a pair of shoes. And in no time at all, I was giving my dad beer money, and I realized that I couldn't control my father. I couldn't fix him. I wasn't a better mom than my mother. My father was not only not going to protect me, he was going to put me in harm's way, as he did that summer. And if anybody was going to build me a glass castle, it was going to have to be me. So in one way, it was the worst summer of my life. In another way, it was the best thing that happened to me, because it gave me the kick in the behind that I needed to realize I got to change things.
In that interval between the end of the dream, your own dream about yourself, your capacity to make this miraculous change, and that kick in the pants that straightened you out, how did you feel? I mean, when your dream came to an end, did you think that you could recover from that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think that's one of the great things my parents gave me. I think they gave me a love of education and a sense of self-esteem. And if parents give you that, then the rest is gravy. Ideally, you also get food and clothing. I acknowledge that. And we didn't always get that. But my father always told me that I could do anything I wanted. And I believed him. I really did. And so it didn't seem that daunting once I gave up on him to start believing in myself.
Well, he did believe that you could do anything. And, of course, I think one of the most stunning stories in the book is when he put you in harm's way. Maybe I can get you to tell that, when he had taken some of the rent money from you and found a way to pay it back.
Well, we went to a pool hall, and Dad started fleecing the guys. My father was a brilliant pool player, and he was letting men grapple me. And actually, I went upstairs with one of them and expected Dad to beat the tar out of the guy, and Dad didn't do anything. And I escaped from it, but it was sort of jarring for me to realize, you know, that Dad knew I was upstairs with this really sort of scurvy guy and that he hadn't done anything. I honestly thought he would have protected me, and he didn't. And in a way, that's okay. You know, maybe that's just me rationalizing, but I learned to fend for myself early. I think that everything in life is both a blessing and a curse. I really do. And one of the blessings of my childhood is that I'm a fighter and a scrapper. And then one of the curses of my childhood is that I'm a fighter and a scrapper. And I had to learn really early on to fend for myself and to take care of myself.
Well, and that was his defense when you confronted him with that. Why didn't you rescue me? He said, well, I knew you could handle it.
Yeah. And it was a pretty lame defense. Mm. but you take what you have and you make the best of it. So I took it and I believed it.
You when people read the story, of course, many, I assume, and let me ask you about the reaction to your family and what people say to you about what that must have been and the judgment that they level against your mother and
father. You know, it's been fascinating to me because so many people are so divided over this book. I keep on – book clubs tell me, they'll say, we had the most heated debate ever about your book. They say, usually we just drink the wine, but this time we really went at it. And they say, I hate your mother. My best friend loves her. And it's usually my mother. People say they understand my father because he's an alcoholic, but my mother's more of a mystery to them. But they'll say, we got into such a big argument. I think she's mentally ill, your mother. What's the deal with her? And, you know, some people have said that they pity me, that I should have been taken away from my parents and put in a foster home. Some people say that, well, certainly your parents were flawed, but they had great gifts as well. And they pass those gifts along to their children. And I choose to side with the latter, which is not to say that people who have problems with my parents are wrong, but I sort of inherited my mom's capacity for looking on the bright side of things.
Tell us more about your mother, because as you said, a lot of the reaction is and attention is focused on her, and you focused on her in your next book.
Yeah, I focused on my mother in my next book because of readers. They're so smart and they're so insightful, and they're all the time telling me things about myself that I didn't understand. So it's been great. I don't need therapy. They can explain things. But my mother was college educated, and as I said, she taught school sometimes, but she chose this chaotic, bizarre life. And I believe that the reason she did it, she grew up on a 180,000 acre ranch where she not only knew you could survive without heat and without electricity, but I think it was the ideal period in her life. And I believe that much of her adulthood was trying to recreate the freedom that she had as a child. But that being said, she just didn't have an overwhelming amount of maternal instinct. She really sort of let the kids fit in for themselves. In fact, I open up the glass castle with seeing her on the street. She was living homeless when I was living in New York. But then I open up with my very earliest memory, and I was 3 years old, and I was cooking hot dogs for myself. And when I sat down to write the book, I didn't think that was any big deal. It was my husband who suggested I open up the book with that. And I said, yeah, that was no big deal. My dress caught on fire. I had to go to the hospital, but it was no big deal. He said, Jeanette, it was a big deal. Trust me. And then when I was writing it, I was looking at a three-year-old and thinking, wow, that's really young to let a three-year-old cook for themselves. And so I'm on a sort of I'm on a campaign to get people to tell their stories, because I think we all have stories and we all know things about ourselves that we don't realize that we know. And we tend not to have good perspective on ourselves. And if you sit down and write your story or tell it, I think it just gives you such an insight, not only into yourself, but into the people in your family.
Well, I wonder what insights you had, because clearly growing up, you had created a kind of narrative about yourself that kept you, first of all, loving your parents. And that's very clear in all of this, the love in which you hold them through the whole book, whatever happens. And there are horrific events that those of us who are parents would not approve of. But then you come back to them as an adult. What happened to you then? Did you change your judgment at all? Did things change in your mind about what they were doing?
You know, I love my parents, and I always have, but I don't think I love them the way that most people love their parents. I cannot turn to my parents. Well, my father's dead now, but I certainly can't turn to my mother for mothering. It's not there. It's not going to happen. I can't have expectations of her. I do love her. The first time that I read back The Glass Castle, after I wrote an early version of it, I read it back and I thought, dang. Jeez.
How'd that kid turn out?
Some pretty wicked things happened to me, didn't they? I was a little shocked, to tell you the truth. Yeah. So it gave me a different perspective, not only on myself, but on them as well. And I had to sit down. I wrote the first version of the book in 6 weeks, and I spent 5 years rewriting it. And I think what you said was very astute about how we create these sort of myths for ourselves. And I was sort of living in a place intellectually and psychologically to keep myself sort of safe. And then when you sit down and stare at the hard facts and you think, oh my gosh, I've really got to confront this. So it was this whole process for me to be honest with myself about what really happened and how I felt about it. And I found that whenever I wrote it as an adult looking back, I would lapse into my bad writing mode, which is sort of stilted journalism and sort of, I heretofore not considered the plethora of influences. So I wrote it as a child going through these things so that I could be honest about what was really happening without passing judgment on them one way or another, which is the way a child experiences their adult.
What's the wonderful thing about the book, the way you maintain that voice all the way through, and that's how we're able to feel the affection you had for your parents in spite of the treatment. Now, you also created another world for yourself, talking about journalism, and became essentially a society reporter, a gossip columnist, whatever, but you're hanging out in circles that you'd never dreamed, I would think.
It was bizarre to me. I mean, here I wasn't white trash. I aspired to be white trash. Okay, I was below the lowest, and the fact that I was then living on Park Avenue and writing about celebrities and doing the red carpet and hanging out with people like Donald Trump was bizarre to me, and I really had expected the Glass Castle to be much more about those years, about living in New York but it didn't work when I sat down to write about it. It felt like I sort of tried to mush together the grapes of wrath and Sex in the City. It was just too weird. And I realized that the real story was about the little girl's relationship with her parents.
Had you aspired to that kind of life when you were a little girl?
I mean, no.
What brought you to that? How'd you get there?
Oh, no, I wanted to be a journalist since I was about 13. I'd worked for the school newspaper, and I was such a nerd and such an outcast, and I didn't belong to any group. But as long as I was on the school newspaper and had a little camera around my shoulder and little pen and pad, then I could go to these events that I wasn't otherwise welcome to. So in that way, I think that maybe as an adult, I still felt that I had entree into these very exclusive worlds. So maybe in that way, I did aspire to it, but I never thought I'd write about celebrities. And I didn't grow up with a TV. I didn't know who these people were, so I had to do sort of a crash course on it. I thought I would write about sort of movers and shakers and social issues, but I was sort of assigned the gossip column, and I loved it. It brought out the yard dog in me, and I just sort of loved it, and I fell into it. But then I started feeling like a phony and a fraud.
Well, were you telling people? How much had you told people about your past?
None. Forget it. I wasn't going to. No. And the irony, some would say hypocrisy, of writing about other people's secrets while I was hiding my own did not escape me. And I wondered the degree to which I was trying to sort of address other people's issues in lieu of my own or whatever. I did try to write my story a couple of times early on. I tried to write my memoir, and I just write a couple of hundred pages and throw it all away. I tried to fictionalize it at one point, but it didn't work fictionalizing it. I couldn't figure out what I was supposed to change. Was I supposed to make myself more heroic or more of a badass? The way things happened the way they did because everybody was true to their nature.
Were you worried about the results?
Oh, I was terrified. Yeah. I was practically in a fetal position under my desk. I thought, you know, there was no doubt in my mind, once people knew the truth about me, that I was going to lose everything. I was completely convinced I'd get fired from my job, that I'd lose all my friends and lose the little meager standing that I'd carved out for myself. And I think that one of the many things I've learned is how kind and smart most people are. But I think more importantly, that pretty much everybody out there has a story. And shame is a very isolating emotion. So a lot of people walk around with these stories as though it's something bad. And I can't tell you how many folks have come up to me after an event, such as the one I'll be having this evening, and they'll tell me their secrets. And very often they're crying. And they'll say, I'm so ashamed. I've never told anybody this before. And they're telling me this amazing story of triumph and resilience. And they're ashamed of it. And so I've come to believe that so often these things that we dislike about ourselves are the best thing we have going for us. And if we're able to shine our light on the dark spots, that's where we find our diamonds. So that's one of the many things I've learned. And that is not why I wrote it. I wrote it because I sort of had to. I felt like such a phony and a fraud that here I was living this la-di-da life when basically I was just, you know, I was just a kid from the lowest of the low. And it has been such a transformative experience having told this story.
How so? Does it change your writing? Does it change your reporting now that you don't have that secret anymore?
It has changed the entire world for me. It has transformed the world I was so ready to be held in contempt and ridicule that it has transformed the world for me from a place filled with potential enemies to a place filled with potential friends. I don't know if it's changed my writing because I was a reporter for forever, and I wrote The Glass Castle and the follow-up, which is about my grandmother. So I think it's just made me trust people more and trust their insights and their compassion.
When you expose things, when you get to these secrets, do you approach it in a different way?
Well, I am the living and breathing proof that the truth shall set you free. I just, you know, somebody who's much wiser than me once said, secrets are like vampires. They suck the life out of you, but they can exist only in the darkness. Once they're exposed to light, there's a moment of horror, but then, poof, they lose their power over you.
Well, I thank you for making a segue between this and our first segment, because I didn't know how to do it, and you did it brilliantly. Jeanette Walls, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Jeanette Walls is the author of The Glass Castle and Half-Broke Horses. She's going to deliver a lecture tonight as part of the Guilford College Bryan series tonight at 7:30, and that's if you want more information, you can go to guilford.edu/Bryan series, B-R-Y-A-N series. Just ahead, we consider the poetry of Langston Hughes. Stay with us on The State of Things.